This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Sunrise this week will be at 4:45, sunset at 9:35. On Tuesday, it will reach 25 degrees Celsius.
Welcome to the Sandwell News of particular interest to blind, vision impaired people. This edition due with you on Saturday, June the 20th, if you're a postal listener, and one or two days before that, if you listen to our podcast or online. What's coming up with SVI this week?
Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here's the SVI activities coming up next week. Tuesday, 23rd June. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Showdown, Portway. Lifestyle Centre, 2 to 4 p.m. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is, anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Wednesday, 24th June, SVI Rocks, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12 noon. Join Rodrigo and Sarah Ann for our popular SVI Rock session. Sing or bring along an instrument and make some noise with us. Boost your musical skills and confidence. SVI Rocks will also be on the 8th of July, leading up to a performance at SVI's open meeting on Monday, the 13th of July. Aquafit, Portway, Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 2 p.m. Get summer body ready. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone, with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you are interested. Thursday, 25th June, Showdown, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is, anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Dartmouth Park Walk, 12 noon. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please let us know that you are coming so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook, or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team, Sandwell Visually Impaired, West Bromwich Town Hall, Lodge Road, West Bromwich, B708AY. Phone 0121 525 481. Oh, www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Some pieces from the week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday, 10th of June. Nursery teacher 4.5k bonus. Murder trial told accused struck girlfriend with truck. Patient jumped at chance for robotic procedure. School strike continues. Tram was expected in August, now due end of the year. Thursday, police given powers to tackle crime in vape shops and other criminal activities. Asta, no big changes in bid to win back shoppers. Mossa needs best support to get Albion players. suspected drug dealer arrested. Friday, appeal after assault on tram. Two measles deaths amongst hundreds of cases in 2026. Baker mixes preparation for big charity fight with launch of new shop. Man accused of girlfriend's murder would say vile things. Saturday, MBE, honour for rock legend. Tony Iommi, hair-pulling rules relaxed. How quiet, Man Mossa surprised, teammate. Strike, football and weather triple whammy for our NHS. Doom and gloom is overdone, says Hunt. Monday, Noddy still feeling the noise at 80. Baggies look to land early deal. Council leader named deputy mayor for combined authority. Foundation building support for communities. Police tell fans no excuse for domestic abuse during World Cup. Tuesday, arrest made over serious assault. Man accused of driving offences. Motorbike dispersal order. 400 arrests in domestic violence clampdown. Pretty muddy 5K charity event.
All those stories coming up courtesy of Express and Star newspapers in the next 2.5 hours, which will also include our usual TV and radio listings from Talking News Federation. There's an article from them too about, I think it's about the Paralympics. I'm also going to include towards the end of this edition another piece from Heather Wastey's talk that she gave to us a few weeks ago, maybe a month or more ago actually, featuring her stories, poems and songs. On to the first day's news from the papers.
This is James Brodie bringing you stories from the Express and Star, the 10th of June. Nursery teachers' 4.5k bonus in disadvantaged areas opens. Dudley and Sandwell are amongst areas to benefit from government initiative. This story is brought to you by LENG. Early years teachers in parts of the Black Country can start applying for a £4,500 bonus under government plans to attract staff to nurseries. Dudley and Sandwell are amongst 10 disadvantaged communities to benefit from the government initiative to boost numbers. The incentive scheme, first announced last July, has gone live for qualified nursery teachers in areas that also include Middlesbrough, Tayneside, Rochdale, Bolton, Hartlepool, Rotherham, Luton and Barking and Dagenham. It will be expanded to 80 areas later this year, all of which have been chosen based on deprivation, whether they have a shortage of teachers and how many pupils are school ready. Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson said it shouldn't matter if you're born in Sandwell or Middlesbrough, in Rochdale or Rotherham. Every child deserves the best teachers with the best tools at their disposal to give them the very best start in life. These measures will help nurseries attract and keep more qualified staff so they can deliver the funded childcare that saves families up to £8,000 a year in communities that need it most. According to the DfE, there are limited numbers of nursery staff who currently hold a graduate teaching qualification. The payment is open to teachers holding qualified teacher status, early years teacher status or early years professional status. They can apply via an online claim service with eligible nurseries set to receive a link from the DfE. Sarah Ronan, director of the Early Education and Childcare Coalition, said, "We welcome this incentive to attract more graduates to work in communities where they can make a difference and change lives, and we're particularly pleased to see the governments offer this bonus in even more areas." Murder trial is told accused struck girlfriend with truck. Jury is told 19-year-old died after being crushed against a lamppost by a vehicle. This story is brought to you by Deborah Hardiman. Supporting this article are two pictures. The first picture is of a police car at the scene of the accident, and then the second picture is that of Lily Whitehouse. A young mother was crushed to death by a truck driven by her boyfriend, it was alleged in court. Mohammed Azim is accused of killing Lily Whitehouse in Old Park Lane, Oldbury, on bonfire night last year, his 41st birthday. A jury at Wolverhampton Crown Court was shown CCTV footage of the moments before her death. The court was told that Ms. Whitehouse died after being crushed against a lamppost by Azim's Mercedes Sprinter. The defendant, who was in navy suit with a pale blue shirt, watched on as prosecution counsel, Miss Rachel Brand KC, opened the case. She said that the pair were having an argument in the build-up to her death. Miss Brand said that the alleged victim had been visiting her baby, who was fathered by another man and was born in September 2025 in the neonatal intensive care unit at Russell Hall Hospital. She told the jury of seven men and five women, one of these things you'll have to consider is why the defendant did that. Why did he drive past as if he was giving a lift home? Why not drop her off? We say the likelihood is the two were having an argument, and that explains why he drove past the road where she lived. CCTV from a nearby school that had audio captured and the sound of Azim's recovery truck idling just out of view of the camera for around 16 minutes before the truck comes into view, and Miss Whitehouse is seen walking quickly alongside the road on the driver's side. The defendant is driving the truck as if he was nudging or pushing her along the road. Lily started running, the vehicle is pursuing her at a low speed, but nevertheless we say he was clearly using the large heavy vehicle as a weapon. She said that as the truck goes out of view, there's a large bang is heard on the CCTV, suggesting it was the sound of it striking a lamppost. Miss Brand said that we believe that she was crushed against the lamppost, perhaps with the driver's door of the truck open at the time. The court heard that Azim of Tiverdale Road and Tiverdale, near Tipton, and Miss Whitehouse had been in an on-off relationship 2023. And the defendant, who had previously been married but was divorced, had picked her up after she got off a bus from the hospital. Instead of driving the victim to a home in Amber Drive, Albury, Azim drove her past her address into Albury Park Lane, where the incident happened. A home office pathologist found the mother had suffered injuries predominantly to her right side whilst in an upright position, including a broken arm, broken ribs, a cut to her liver, and a traumatic injury to her chest, which caused severe bleeding, leading to her death. Miss Brand said that after Miss Whitehouse was injured, Azim picked her up and put her in his truck whilst dialing 999 and claiming he had seen her being hit by a vehicle that did not stop at the scene. He then allegedly stopping in nearby Park Street and put her on the pavement. He was described as being agitated when the police and paramedics arrived at the scene. He told them that they took too long to arrive and that she was gone. When police spoke to him, he gave detailed description about what had happened and said he'd seen it happen and he wished he'd been able to chase the vehicle. Paramedics and doctors did all they could to try and save Lily, but it became clear they couldn't do so and she was pronounced dead on the pavement. Police thought that the defendant's account was odd. He admitted he knew Miss Whitehouse and it seemed to be strange coincidence that he witnessed a hit and run with someone known to him and picked her up and put her in his truck. He was arrested on suspicion of murder. In interview, he said nothing at all about how she came by her injuries. He answered no comment to most questions about his relationship with Lily and how she came by her death. It means police had to do their best to piece together what happened without any assistance from him. She added the defendant may try to suggest she fell to the ground and he accidentally ran her over. We suggest that that cannot be true considering the loud banging noise that is heard. That is the truck impacting with something hard, not the sound of a truck hitting a slight built woman who was 5'8" and less than 7 stone. We say that it is highly significant that the defendant chose to pick up Lily Whitehouse and put her in his truck, instead of simply calling the emergency services to come to the place where she was injured. He wanted to distance himself and her from the place it happened. Within minutes, he was lying. To prove the charges of murder, we have to satisfy you that the defendant caused those fatal injuries. He either intended to kill her, or at the very least intended to cause her a very serious injury. We say you will be sure the defendant is guilty of murder. Any person who deliberately drives a large, heavy truck at a person and either pins them up against a lamppost or runs them over can only have intended to have caused at least really serious harm. Actions speak louder than words, we say. Regretting it afterwards is not a defence. Whitehouse denies murder. The trial, which is expected to last 2 weeks, continues. Patient jumped at chance to have robotic procedure. This story is brought to you by Gurdip Tandy. Supporting this article is a man in glasses smiling directly at the camera, wearing a blue polo shirt with white stripes. The caption says Peter Lambert had the robotic assisted treatment at the Midland Met in Smethwick. a pensioner has become the first patient in the Black Country to undergo a unique robotic-assisted treatment for enlarged prostates. Urological surgeons at Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust performed the first aquablation therapy procedure in the region, which uses a high-pressure, heat-free water jet to remove prostate tissue. The minimally invasive procedure takes around 40 minutes to complete and can lead to faster recovery times and fewer complications. Pete Lambert, aged 79, from Sutton Coldfield, underwent the procedure at the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital in Smethwick. The retired microbiologist was diagnosed with enlarged prostate in 2025 and was referred to the urologists at the Trust who offered him the new treatment. Miss Lambert said, "The procedure was explained to me and I jumped at the chance to have it because it would have fewer side effects than the traditional treatments. I had no pain after the surgery and it only took 3 days for me to notice that my normal urinary function had been restored. The best part of having this procedure has been the improvement in my quality of life. I've been able to get back to doing all the things I enjoyed, like gardening, cycling and other physical activities, without the need to worry about where the nearest toilet is. So I've really experienced the benefits I was hoping for." During the procedure, surgeons use an aquablation hydrus robotic system from Project Bio Robotics to guide the water jets, utilising a camera and ultrasound map of the patient's prostate to remove tissue with precision. Unlike other treatments for benign prostate hyperplasia, commonly known as enlarged prostate, aquablation therapy preserves both sexual function and continence in men. Consultant urologist Dr. Fahd Khan, who performed the first aquablation procedure in the Midland Met with consultant urologist Ananda Dansekaran, said, "I was very pleased that we are now able to bring the benefits of such an innovative treatment for enlarged prostates to our patients. We've become the first in the region to deliver this procedure and I'm immensely proud of this achievement. We always strive to give our patients the highest standards of care and best treatments possible, and I hope we can continue to achieve these life-changing results for our local population." School strike continues after staff walkout for a second time. Staff from a Sandwell school have downed tools for a second day of strike action as part of an ongoing dispute. Teaching assistants and midday supervisors from Orchard School in Oldbury started the second day of strike action yesterday as part of their ongoing dispute at the school around concerns over safety, staffing levels and the school's ability to cope with growing pupil numbers. 90 workers at the school joined the second strike day as the school announced further closures. Workers claim school bosses failed to respond to grievances and concerns raised about student and staff safety at the facility. Rachel Fagan, GMB organiser, said, "Our members are sending a clear message today that staff at the school refuse to be ignored. They've raised serious issues with school bosses only to feel like their concerns don't matter. We're calling for serious talks to resolve these issues and a long-term plan involving staff at all levels of the school. This may be the second day of strike action, but it will not be the last if we don't see urgent action." The strike action follows up on a rally outside Sandwell Council House on June the 2nd to mark the start of the action. Tram expected in August will now arrive at the end of the year. Supporting this article is a picture of a blue tram outside the entrance of New Street Station, with the caption, "Trams are parked awaiting deployment on the new metro line to Dudley." Trams will not run on the new West Midlands Metro extension in August as planned, and the opening of the line is now estimated to be before the end of the year. The project to take the metro from Wensbury into Brierley Hill via the Merrihill Centre has been dogged by delays caused by increasing costs and unexpected extra work which only came to light during construction. A Transport for West Midlands spokesperson said that today it was a hugely complex project. It said that the line would open in August, which was already a delay. The TFWM spokesman said, "We understand why people are eager to see the new tram route opened. It will bring a major economic boost to Dudley town centre and communities along the line. As the longest light rail route currently being delivered in the UK, this is a hugely complex project. It has required repairing Victorian infrastructure, navigating unpredictable ground conditions and working within a busy town centre. The good news is that its construction is now finished and we're in an extensive testing and commissioning phase involving external partner organisations and industry regulators. Testing will require traffic and tram movements to be carefully monitored and managed. Our priority through this phase is to ensure that we can guarantee a safe and reliable service for passengers. TFWM was unable to give a specific date for when the line will open, but are expecting the trams to be running before the end of the year. Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley has written to TFWM to complain about the ongoing delays, adding, "If this was a Dudley Borough Council project, I'd sack the lot of them."
Hi, this is Debbie with some articles from The Express and Star from the 11th of June. Police in the West Midlands will be able to shut dodgy vape shops, barbers and nail salons for up to a year in a bid to crack down on organised crime on high streets. The legislation due to be introduced later this year will double the maximum 6 months allowed under current rules, which the Home Office says has led to businesses reopening before investigations are finished. Raising the maximum time frame for the temporary closure orders is designed to give investigators more time to gather evidence, pursue prosecutions, and identify the criminal bosses acting behind the scenes. The government plans to bring in secondary legislation to extend the closure orders by the end of the year following consultation. Officials are also urgently reviewing the inclusion of vape shops, barbers and car washes on the skilled worker sponsorship list amid concerns about the abuse of the visa system. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood said high streets across the country have been hijacked by criminal gangs operating in plain sight, running vape stores, dodgy barbers and nail salons to launder their dirty money. I have launched a nationwide crackdown to raid and close thousands of illegal businesses, arrest bosses and seize their dirty cash. But I will go further, introducing new laws to close these shops for good and put criminal bosses behind bars. John Herriman, Chief Executive at the Charter Trading Standards Institute, said, "Closure orders are a key enforcement tool for trading standards officers." Asda rolls out major changes as it bids to win back shoppers. Asda is continuing to push ahead with the second year of its turnaround as it seeks to win back market share from rival supermarkets. The retailer has been losing ground to competitors in recent years, with discounter Aldi particularly hot on its heels to overtake it as the UK's third biggest supermarket. Despite reporting an EBITDA and sales drop in its latest trading update, Executive Chairman Alan Layton went on to claim that Asda's progress in key areas like price, availability and customer satisfaction was edging forward. He also insisted that it had an improved customer offer, stable core systems, a strengthened balance sheet and a strong leadership team to deliver its formula for growth strategy. In its latest efforts to revitalise the business, Asda has unveiled a series of major changes across its product, price and in-store experience. Under one of its biggest product refreshes in recent years, Asda rolled out more than 400 new food and drink lines earlier this month. This covered a host of categories such as frozen, bakery, produce, fresh meat and food to go. Additionally, it upgraded two of its most shopped categories, fresh produce and frozen. Explaining why it made these changes, Asda Chief Customer Officer Rachel Eyre said, "We know that families are making careful choices about how they spend, so our job is to make sure Asda is the easiest place to get great quality, real choice and outstanding value. These changes are about focusing on the areas that matter most to the customers, the products they buy every week, the value they demand and the experience they have in store." She adds, "It's about getting back to what Asda has always stood for, as a consumer champion, while making sure customers can see and feel those improvements every time they shop with us." The changes also involve the introduction of greengrocers to the supermarket aisles to help ensure availability and quality in store. The grocer initially revealed plans to roll out greengrocers to 1,500 of its stores across the nation in 2021. It went on to extend the offering to 250 shops in 2022, before phasing out the greengrocer position across its shops. Upon their return, Eyre says that the greengrocers will play an important role in bringing expertise back into the fruit and veg aisle. They're there to make sure products are well presented, availability is strong, and that customers can easily find the best of what's in season, she explains. Asda's changes don't stop there. The supermarket's frozen category has also been revamped to make shopping quicker and easier. This consists of a clearer layout and signage, as well as more prominence given to the retailer's best-selling lines on the shelf. To top it off, over 230 new frozen products have been added to the category. Balaclava Gang Attack Teenager by Dan Stacey. A teenage boy was taken to hospital after being attacked by a gang disguised by wearing balaclavas. The attack happened on a busy black country road at around 3:20 p.m. on Tuesday, shortly after schools ended for the day. Police today appealed for witnesses to the attack. Detectives have declined to say whether any weapons were involved. The attack happened in Hyde Road, Wednesbury, and led to the victim being taken to hospital. His injuries were initially described as potentially serious, but a later update said he was not as badly hurt as first feared. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said detectives were appealing for more information. He said, "We are investigating an assault on a boy who was attacked by a group of other boys wearing balaclavas in Wednesbury. We were called to Hyde Road shortly before 3:20 p.m. on Tuesday. The boy received injuries which are not serious and was taken to hospital to be assessed. Paramedics were called to the scene after reports of the attack. Police were also called following a 999 call. It is not known if the attack was targeted or random." West Midlands Ambulance Service said it treated the teenage boy before taking him to hospital for further assessment. A spokesman said, "We were called at 3:21 p.m. to reports of an assault. Upon arrival, we found one patient, a teenage boy, who was assessed and has sustained potentially serious injuries. He received treatment at the scene before being conveyed to hospital for further assessment." The latest update on the attack followed initial reports of a serious incident close to a school in the area, which prompted an emergency response from police and ambulance crews. Police are asking anyone with information, including mobile phone footage, to contact 101, quoting crime number 20/280065/26. Mozza needs right support, Robinson. Club hero Paul Robinson has called on Albion to give James Morrison the best backing possible in this summer's transfer window. The former fullback accepts the Baggies don't have the same financial clout as some of their championship rivals, but he says it is essential the club get their recruitment right as they look to push up the table following last season's narrow escape from relegation. Morrison is preparing for his first season in charge, and Robinson told the Express and Star, "The club can't be silly and waste money. They've got to play it smart with it all and do the right things. Obviously, the teams that are in the league as well, you're not going to compete with them on a financial level. Mozza will understand what type of players he wants, and the club have got to back him. That's what this club have got to do. They've got to support him in their decisions. I just hope the club support in the right way, and again, it's West Brom people in the background that need to help people like Mozza do a really good job. I really hope the club see that. I hope the club understand that." Morrison oversaw a remarkable turnaround after becoming the club's third head coach of the season. Robinson, who made 239 appearances for the Baggies between 2003 and 2010, hopes the club can build on the momentum with a strong summer. He said, "You've got to look at the squad. What Mozza's done there is played the players in their best positions. It's a collective thing now. That stability needs to carry on into next season where you're buying the right players." Suspected drug dealer arrested. A young man was arrested following a police operation targeting knife crime, drug dealing and antisocial behaviour. Officers from the West Midlands Police Guardian Task Force were carrying out patrols on Monday when they spotted a vehicle behaving suspiciously on the streets around Victoria Park, Tipton. Checks revealed links to antisocial behaviour, weapons and drugs. Police said as officers moved in, the vehicle sped off. During a pursuit, the car mounted a curb and collided with several parked vehicles before crashing into a tree. Police said a bag was thrown from the vehicle shortly before it came to a stop. A suspect was pursued on foot and detained in Manor Road. A search of the discarded bag uncovered around 80 wraps of suspected Class A drugs. A 19-year-old was arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs and remains in custody.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 12th of June. Appeal after report of assault on tram. Police were called to West Bromwich after reports that a person had been assaulted on a tram. Officers received reports that an assault had occurred on a tram travelling to West Bromwich yesterday morning. Police were called at around 10 a.m. Officers met the tram at the West Bromwich Central stop and spoke to people involved in the incident. Police inquiries are continuing and witnesses are urged to come forward. British Transport Police said, "Anyone who witnessed the incident is asked to contact British Transport Police by texting 61016, quoting reference 225 of 11th of June. Two measles deaths amid hundreds of cases in 2026. West Midlands is a hotspot for the highly infectious disease, warn health officials. Written by Ella Pickover, Press Association. Two children in England have died from measles this year, and the West Midlands is one of the hotspots for the illness, health officials have said. The UK Health Security Agency, UKHSA, said that one child died from acute measles and another child's death was linked to the late effects of measles. It comes as measles continues to circulate in many parts of the country, the health authority said, with the West Midlands a particular concern. So far this year, there have been 736 cases in the UK, compared with 959 cases for the whole of 2025, new figures show. Many of the cases have been linked to outbreaks in the West Midlands and London. The UKHSA said the majority of cases were among unvaccinated children aged 10 and under. The UKHSA said that in the last month, cases have been confirmed both the East and West Midlands, as well as in the capital. Dr. Vanessa Saliba, consultant epidemiologist at UKHSA, said, "Our thoughts and condolences are with the families who have so tragically lost their children. Measles continues to circulate in many parts of the country, and as we have seen it, can be very serious and even fatal. We urge all parents to ensure their children are up to date with their MMR or MMRV vaccines, giving them the best and safest protection against measles, which can spread very easily. Anyone who has missed out on their measles vaccines can catch up through their GP practice, whatever their age. Getting vaccinated also helps protect babies who are too young to be vaccinated and people unable to have the vaccine due to a health condition. Please don't delay, and if you or your child are not up to date, book an appointment today." Health Secretary James Murray said, "My thoughts are with the families who have suffered such unimaginable loss. These deaths are a heartbreaking reminder that measles is not a harmless childhood illness. Measles can lead to serious complications that can be fatal, and the MMR vaccine, which has saved countless lives, remains the best protection we have against this highly infectious disease. I urge all parents and carers to check that their children are up to date with their vaccinations, as it is never too late to catch up, even if you miss a dose. By ensuring our children are vaccinated, we not only protect them, but also help safeguard the most vulnerable in our communities." Measles is a highly infectious viral illness that can spread very easily among people who are not fully vaccinated. Whilst many people recover, the illness can lead to serious complications such as pneumonia, brain inflammation, and in rare cases, long-term disability or death. Earlier this year, the World Health Organization said that the UK is no longer considered to have eliminated measles. The announcement in January follows a plateau in vaccination coverage and a surge in cases. The latest data shows that 91.8% of 5-year-olds had received one dose of the MMR, measles, mumps and rubella vaccine in England in 2024-25. Unchanged from 2023-24, and the lowest level since 2010-11. In the West Midlands, a problem has also been identified with measles in adults because of low vaccination rates. A spokesperson for Public Health in Worcestershire said, "We're seeing a concerning increase in measles cases locally, particularly among adults who are either unvaccinated or unsure of their vaccination status. Whilst our childhood vaccination rates remain high, this situation highlights that measles is not just a childhood illness. It can affect anyone who isn't protected. Measles is highly infectious and can lead to serious complications. People often think it's a mild illness, but it can be severe, especially for vulnerable individuals. The best protection is to have both doses of the MMR vaccine." We are particularly keen to raise awareness of the early symptoms of measles, which can appear several days before the well-known rash develops. During this time, individuals are still highly infectious. Alongside this article, there is a picture of a child's shoulder. They are wearing a blue t-shirt. You cannot see their face. They are just against a white background. They're wearing a blue t-shirt which has been pulled off one of their shoulders, and on that shoulder you can see lots of little red dots, rash and irritation. It's captioned, "Measles has hit parts of the West Midlands where there is an issue with low vaccination rates." Alongside the picture is a list of measles symptoms: a high temperature, runny or blocked nose, sneezing and coughing, red, sore, watery eyes, spots in the mouth, rash after a few days. To get help, call 111 or ask for an urgent GP appointment if your child has measles or has been in close contact with a carrier. Ensure your child is protected by MMR. Speak to your health visitor or doctor to arrange. Baker mixes preparation for big charity fight with launch of new shop. It's been a busy week for the owner of a Black Country bakery as he mixes the opening of a new shop with preparing for a big charity boxing match. Nathan Hadley and his team officially launched the newest Bake My Day shop on Union Street in Wensbury on Tuesday, with long queues reported going out of the door. And the businessman is boxing clever, as this weekend he is starring in a charity boxing match. Bake My Day has become a popular chain for its brand of traditional burnt tob cobs, freshly baked cakes and bakes, and range of sandwiches, with big queues at its three chain stores in Great Bridge, Blackheath and Albury. And its newest shop has proved no different, with stock running out early due to demand. A message on the Bake My Day Facebook account thanked visitors who had come to support the shop this week. It said, "Guys, we are overwhelmed with the support we have had today and we are so proud to serve the people of Wensbury and bring back a traditional bakery to the high street. We ran out earlier than expected, so we will be doing a little more tomorrow so people won't be disappointed. Thank you all again," the message said. Alongside the opening of a new shop, Mr. Hadley has been training and preparing for a charity boxing match on Saturday, June 13th, to raise funds for Blood Cancer UK and New Cross Neonatal. Mr. Hadley said he was taking on the match against Spencer Cree to raise the funds as his mother Jo was undergoing treatment for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. He said, "Behind the scenes at Bake My Day, my mum Jo, who is usually popping in and out of stores, has been battling non-Hodgkin lymphoma for 4 years and is about to undergo stem cell treatment to hopefully eradicate the cancer. All the staff at Bake My Day are behind Jo, who we know can beat this horrible disease. We ask all our Bake My Day family if they can donate to Blood Cancer UK, even if it's 1p or £1, or a small donation in one of our stores. Everything counts. I know times are tough, and even asking is hard enough. Bake My Day is personally donating £500 to Blood Cancer UK. Learn more and donate at justgiving.com/page-Nathan-Hadley-4. Man accused of murdering his girlfriend would say vile things. Accused sped off in vehicle as pregnant teenager fell to the ground, trial is told. Written by Deborah Hardiman, chief reporter. An alleged murder victim went into premature labour after the man later accused of taking her life sped off in his vehicle, causing her to fall to the ground, the jury was told. Recovery truck driver Mohammed Azim is on trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court, accused of murdering his 19-year-old girlfriend Lily Whitehouse in Albury on November 5th last year, 2 months after she gave birth to a premature baby that was fathered by another man. Giving evidence for the prosecution, her aunt Melissa Wheeler told the jury yesterday that her niece met Azim, who she referred to as H, when she was 16 or 17, after they exchanged numbers in West Bromwich High Street and began a relationship. Miss Wheeler told the trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court that her niece had been besotted with Azim, but that the pair would fight and the defendant would sometimes block her when she tried to speak to him. Robert Price, junior prosecution counsel, asked Miss Wheeler about how Miss Whitehouse came to go into labour 10 weeks early in September. She replied that she was aware that Azim was not the father of the baby and that he was not happy that she was pregnant, so she would hide her bump with long clothing when she visited him. She said she had an argument with H, Miss Wheeler said. I'm not sure what it was about, and H sped off in the car and she fell over and cut her hand. The next day she had pains in her tummy and she said she didn't want to tell H because he was asleep, and I said you need to call the hospital because you might be in early labour. The 19-year-old went to Russell's Hall Hospital the next day in a taxi, and her baby was born soon after. Libby Higgs, a friend of the victim, also told the jury about the nature of Miss Whitehouse's relationship with the defendant. She told me he used to say vile things to her. He used to punch her and do things to her like that, and at points it would mark her arms. She asked him why he did that, and he said it was play fighting. She said to me, it's not play fighting, because he's marking me and I've got bruises on my arms. She had to wear jackets to hide them. She said she covered them herself because she didn't want people seeing. She said they had a lot of arguments and he would tell her to F off and leave him. She said he would ring her using no caller ID and he would drive past where she lived to see if he could see her. She used to voice note me a lot and sometimes she would cry. I used to tell her she needed to leave him because he was no good for her, and it would only get worse if she didn't leave him. Miss Higgs told the court of an incident around a year before she died, in which Miss Whitehouse called her, and she could hear Azim shouting in the background. When she spoke to the victim a few hours later, Miss Whitehouse explained they had been arguing, and while in Azim's car, he had picked up her phone and chucked it at her face. Azim, aged 41, and of Tiverdale Road in Tipton, is accused of hitting the victim with his white flatbed truck in Old Park Lane in Oldbury during a row. He denies murder. The trial continues.
Hello, this is Subject with your news from the Express and Star, Saturday 13 of June. Honour for rock legend Tony Iommi by Mark Andrews. He is a rock legend and also a tireless campaigner for charity in the West Midlands. Today, Birmingham-born heavy metal legend Tony Iommi has been appointed an MBE for services to music and good causes in the King's Birthday Honours List. Iommi, who founded Black Sabbath with former schoolmate Ozzy Osbourne in 1968, was the only constant member of the band throughout its five-decade existence. He was the main composer of the band's music, and numerous polls have described him as one of the greatest guitarists of all time. But he also spends time helping others. He is patron of Ward 19, the specialist cancer ward at Birmingham Heartlands Hospital. In 2020, he raised almost £19,000 with an auction of music memorabilia, including his own guitar. He said, "What an unbelievable honour. Music has been my life and I've been very lucky. It's been a privilege doing something I love and then to see that music connect with so many over the years. And to be able to help raise money for charities close to my heart has meant the world to me," he added. Hair pulling rules relaxed ahead of the new season. Referees will be able to issue yellow cards for hair pulling in the 2026-27 season after a new set of football principles and refereeing points of emphasis were unveiled by the Premier League. Three players were sent off for pulling hair in the top flight last season, with the act previously viewed as violent conduct after professional game match officials limited, known as PGMOL, outlined it would be punished as a red card at the start of the 2025-26 campaign. However, this is one of several changes to be implemented with a hair pull without excessive force and or brutality deemed to be worthy of a yellow card. A greater focus on penalising holding by defenders at corners and challenges on goalkeepers will also be brought in by Premier League referees. An announcement by the Premier League on Friday detailed new refereeing points of emphasis for the upcoming season after discussions with the Top Flight Game Improvement Advisory Group, known as GIAG, which highlighted the desire to change the punishment for hair pulling. A red card will be issued when there is a clear and deliberate action to pull an opponent's hair with excessive force and or brutality. A yellow card will be issued if the action is deemed to be without excessive force and or brutality. A Premier League statement read. How quiet man, Mozza, surprised ex-teammate. There is a picture of head coach James Morrison. Former teammate Paul Robinson has revealed how James Morrison went from the quiet man of the Albion dressing room to managing the club. Robinson concedes he did not have Morrison down as future management material when he joined the Baggies aged 21 in 2007. The pair played three seasons together, winning the championship title in 2008. And while Robinson is delighted to now see Morrison in charge at the Hawthorns, he concedes he could not have seen it coming back in the early days. Asked if he saw Morrison as a future manager, Robinson told the Express and Star, "Not really with Mozza, no, because he was so quiet. Some people go about their business quieter, don't they? He learnt, he studied, he's watched people, and he's now taken full control of that." Morrison oversaw a dramatic reversal of fortunes after taking over in February, with the club sliding toward relegation. The Baggies went 10 matches unbeaten to preserve their championship status, with the former midfielder then given the job on a permanent basis. Robinson, who made more than 700 appearances in a career which spanned two decades, reckons Morrison will have benefited from the culture he first found at the club as a player, under then-boss Tony Mowbray. "When we were in the building, it was all about standards. It was about the culture of West Brom," he said. "If you cross the line, we sort it out as a group of players, and that's the way it was. Unfortunately, football is coming away from that side of it now, where you can have a go at certain people. It's not acceptable now for some reason or another. But what Mozza has instilled in that togetherness and of what West Brom is all about and how we go about our business at West Brom, as soon as you get all that in place, you're then onto a winning formula for me. It's just getting the basics right. When you look at it, he just got all the basics right, and he put the players in their best positions and asked them to go and express themselves. That's the best formula to do it. Don't complicate things. Don't ask players to do things that they can't do. It's just simple, simple stuff." Strikes, football and weather in a triple whammy for NHS. Officials stress health service is open as usual in spite of latest pressures. By Ella Pickover, health correspondent. The NHS is facing a triple whammy of pressure as the latest strike by resident doctors is set to coincide with a heatwave and the World Cup, health officials have said. Resident doctors in England from the British Medical Association, known as BMA, are set to stage a four-day walkout from 7 a.m. on Monday, the 16th round of strike action since 2023. The walkout will end on Friday at 6:59 a.m. NHS officials have urged the public to come forward as usual, but are expecting a rise in need linked to a predicted heatwave and activity linked to England's first World Cup game on Wednesday. It is expected that pubs and bars will be busy as the Three Lions take on Croatia at 9 p.m. UK time. Meanwhile, the Met Office forecasts suggest that temperatures will be generally above normal between Tuesday and Thursday. NHS England said patients should continue to attend all planned appointments unless they are specifically contacted directly to rearrange them. And anyone with urgent or emergency need should seek care in the normal way. Professor Frankie Swords, National Medical Director at NHS England, said, "The NHS remains open as usual during this period of industrial action, with staff across the NHS doing everything they can to keep patients safe and minimise disruption to services. With temperatures set to rise again this week and the World Cup kicking off, it will be triple whammy of pressure, but staff will pull together as they always do to keep the show on the road and ensure people continue to receive the care they need. Please come forward for care as normal, call 999 or attend A&E in an emergency and use 111 online first for urgent but non-life-threatening support. Sir Kieran Devane, Chief Executive of the NHS Alliance, said, "Local NHS leaders have become all too familiar with dealing with industrial action stemming from this long and damaging dispute. Yet again, every effort will be made during next week's walkout to minimise disruption to patients, despite potential additional pressures as a result of the weather and the football. But there will be some knock-on delays to care, which will be hugely frustrating for those affected. And for every stoppage, there is a very significant hit to NHS finances." The BMA has been approached for comment. The doom and gloom is overdone, says Hunt. Book tells of backlash, sacrifice and Britain's potential. There is a picture of Sir Jeremy Hunt and his second book. Former Conservative Chancellor Sir Jeremy Hunt says that one of the greatest paradoxes of politics is how sensitive so many politicians are. Hunt is no stranger to experiencing public backlash, particularly during his tenure as Health Secretary between 2012 and 2018, when the Department of Health announced a controversial new junior doctor's contract, resulting in a series of strikes. One of the greatest paradoxes of politics is that politicians actually need thick skins, but they have thin skins, says Godalming and Ash MP Hunt. Part of the reason people go into politics is they want to change the world for the better. And I give credit to all my parliamentary colleagues. I think they have a strong grain of altruism, but they don't want to be on a stage being applauded as they make the world better. Hunt says that politicians are human, adding, "I don't mind criticism, as long as it comes from someone who doesn't know me, but the criticism that hurts me is from someone who knows me." His latest book, Can We Be Rich Again? The Surprising Potential of Britain's Economy, looks at the potential to boost all different areas of Britain's economy, and there are plenty of personal antidotes sprinkled throughout. Hunt writes about radio presenters routinely mispronouncing his last name and talks about the impact his career had on his family, mentioning how his wife Lucia and their three children had to leave their Downing Street home fairly quickly after the Conservatives lost the 2024 general election. Politics is very tough on families. I saw a Netflix biopic of Ronald Reagan in which Nancy Reagan says that being married to a public figure is like having a third person in the marriage, and I knew immediately what she meant, he says. It's not a job that you can leave behind in the office at the end of the day. It's with you 24/7. It's with you weekends. Hunt suggests that one of the hardest aspects of the job is the instability, saying, when you're in cabinet, you have no job security. So you're thinking, I am doing the most important job I will do in my entire life, and it could be over tomorrow. So you're basically saying to your family, bear with me, guys. I love you dearly, but I've got to focus on the job for now, because I'm never going to have a chance like this again. That's why you're not really as good a husband or a dad as you would like to be. And I think that's something that affects everyone in politics. On the incident when the family had to leave Downing Street after the general election, Hunt says, I tried to position it as something that was an adventure. It was an adventure when we moved in. It was an adventure when we moved out. Hunt's 2025 book, Can We Be Great Again, was the book I had wished I had been given on the day I became Foreign Secretary, he says, while Can We Be Rich Again is the book I wish I had been given the day I became Chancellor. Former Prime Minister Liz Truss called him into the position in October 2024 after the market backlash to her first Chancellor Kwesi Kwarteng's mini-budget. He had been Foreign Secretary, Health Secretary and Culture Secretary in past Tory governments, and while he was praised for being Culture Minister during the final stages of planning for the London 2012 Olympics, he became a controversial figure during the 2015 junior doctors' contract dispute. Recalling when he stepped into the role of Chancellor, Hunt says, "Markets were collapsing around my ears. We had 11% inflation, the economy was going into recession, we had a £72 billion black hole in public finances, and I had never studied economics to any depth, and never had any ministerial jobs where I was responsible for the economy." He acknowledges that people might ask why he didn't make all of the changes laid out in the book, saying, "The truth is, you learn on the job. You don't know everything the moment you arrive. Some things you uncover while you're doing the job, some things you realise after you stop doing it." Hunt says he's naturally a glass half full person, adding, "I try and make the case in this book that we have overdone the doom and gloom about Britain. We've got loads of very big problems, but when it comes to the economy, the Centre for Economics and Business Research is saying that by 2030, we will overtake Japan and become the fifth largest economy in the world. What we forget is other people have problems too, and we've got some amazing things in this country. Treatments and vaccines discovered in the UK during the pandemic save more lives globally than those from any other country. And that is because of the most amazing research across our universities. In the age of AI, we are the third largest AI powerhouse after the United States and China. Can we be rich again? The Surprising Potential of Britain's Economy is published in hardback by Swift Press, priced £25.
Hello, this is Jenny. The following articles are taken from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 15th of June. Noddy is still feeling the noise as he celebrates his 80th birthday. Mark Andrews looks back on the road to stardom for legendary Slade frontman. Noddy Holder recalls the first time he appeared on stage. Like a lot of grassroots venues in the 1950s, Walsall Working Men's Club rang something called Free and Easy, a sort of post-war version of karaoke. Pianist on stage and punters invited to have a go at singing themselves. One day, his father, Jack, dragged 7-year-old Noddy up onto the stage, so he sang I Believe by Frankie Lane, the number one in the hit parade at the time. "I sung it pretty good and it was downhill all the way after that," he jokes. "I got the first taste of applause. I wanted more and more." He certainly got that. The boy from the Beachdale estate went on to become a global phenomenon, selling 50 million records as frontman for glam rock band Slade, and later enjoyed some success as an actor too. And half a century after the height of glam rock, Noddy remains a national institution, adored by a new generation of fans who were not born in the band's heyday. Neville Holder was born on June 15th, 1946, in the calmer area of Walsall. His father, Jack, was a window cleaner by day and a club singer by night, and his love of music was a big influence on young Neville. At infant school, a teacher called him Noddy for nodding in reply to questions rather than answering yes, and the nickname stuck. In 1953, at the age of 7, his family moved to the Beachdale estate in Walsall, which was also home to Rob Halford, who would go on to become the lead singer with Judas Priest. Noddy's father loved Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald and Al Johnson, and would buy his 78s from Taylor's record store in Bridge Street, Walsall. But by the age of 9, Noddy decided Billy Fury was a bit more exciting. In his book, The World According to Noddy, the singer revealed how his parents were more than a little concerned that his growing love, this controversial new sound, was sweeping Britain. I'd heard about this new film featuring Bill Haley and the Comets called Blackboard Jungle and desperately wanted to see it, he said. The Teddy Boy era was in full swing and stories of kids vandalising cinema seats and driving in the aisles were dominating the news headlines. My parents had got wind of this and banned me from going to our local picture house, but I was so determined to see it that I borrowed my dad's Brill cream, gelled my hair back and slipped off anyway. Sure enough, Hayley blew me away and I was hooked. As it happened, all the kids at the cinema behaved impeccably. They were just hugely excited. From that moment on, I couldn't get enough of this new sound. And then he discovered Little Richard. When I first heard his records, I flipped, he says. I liked a lot of the black artists, like Big Joe Turner. Every Saturday night, I'd race to the telly to watch my idols, Cliff, Marty Wilde, Billy Fury, Adam Faith and Joe Brown, performing their latest hits. Then I'd dash to my bedroom, collar turned up to mimic the new moves that were so much a part of their acts. He quickly started building up his record collection from money earned doing a window cleaning round and sensed his future would be bound up in music. By the time I reached secondary school, I was already planning a career in music and I started practising guitar with my new best mate, Phil Burnell, he recalls. Not that he got any encouragement at school. Noddy passed the 11 plus and went to Walsall Grammar School for 1 year before moving on to the new T.P. Riley Community School. He enjoyed school and passed 6 O-levels, but teachers did little to encourage his passion for music. Eventually, I'd saved enough to buy my own gramophone and loved sitting in my bedroom listening to my cherished 78s. It wasn't long before I started to dream about how great it would be if I could reproduce those sounds myself, and that's when I started hankering for my very own guitar. Then Christmas came and his dream came true. You can imagine my excitement when Mum and Dad handed over the parcel and I discovered what was inside. But there was one problem. I couldn't play a note. Fortunately, my resourceful Mum knew a gifted jazz guitarist called Freddie Degville, who agreed to teach me. My road to stardom had begun. Baggies Look to Land Early Deal, an article by Matt Mayer. Albion are poised to make early inroads in the transfer window as they work to complete the signing of striker Jimmy J. Morgan from Chelsea. The 20-year-old youth international is close to joining in a deal worth around £1.3 million. Morgan scored 14 goals on loan at Peterborough in League One last season and the Baggies believe he is capable stepping up into the Championship. Albion are also close to completing a deal for 19-year-old defender Carter Pinnington from Liverpool. Pinnington is viewed as a player with big potential and will initially be involved with the under-21s. Morgan's signing is something of a statement of intent from Albion, who are taking a front-foot approach to their business over the summer. Owners, Bill Cull, were faced with a major profit and sustainability headache when they arrived in February 2024, meaning the Baggies were effectively forced to sell before they could buy, needing to make a tidy trading profit. But the hard work should now pay dividends and allow the club to be more proactive in pursuing targets. Boss James Morrison has remained in close contact with Director of Football Operations Ian Pearce and Technical Director Dominic Price throughout the summer. Goalkeeper Max O'Leary is the only player to agree terms so far after signing a 3-year deal, though Albion are hopeful of keeping Josh Mayer and Carlin Grant. Morrison has stressed the club's work in the market must focus on quality rather than quantity. Speaking at the end of the season, he explained, "It's about getting the right people. There's a process in place. We're all working together." Council leader named Deputy Mayor for Combined Authority. An article by Isabella Boneham. The West Midlands Combined Authority has announced that Councillor Stephen Simpkins has been appointed Deputy Mayor of the West Midlands. The appointment was confirmed on Friday, as the new West Midlands Combined Authority, the WMCA Board, met for the first time following recent local elections. Councillor Simpkins is the leader of the Labour-run City of Wolverhampton Council. He's been the leader of the council for 2 years and 9 months, having taken over the role as acting leader in July 2023 and officially been elected on September 13th, 2023. He stepped into the leadership position following the death of the previous leader, Ian Brookfield. Prior to leading the authority, Councillor Simpkins served as a ward representative for the Bilston area for more than 2 decades. He will maintain his position as council leader following his appointment by West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker to the deputy role. In the role, Councillor Simpkins, who has been part of the WMCA since it began, will support the Mayor and serve as an ambassador for the region. Councillor Simpkins said, "It's a massive honour to be asked to serve as Deputy Mayor of the West Midlands. As someone who grew up in Bilston and has the privilege of leading my home city of Wolverhampton, I'm incredibly proud to be able to represent the Black Country and all of the West Midlands region in this role. The West Midlands is a place full of talent, ambition and opportunity, and I'm looking forward to working with Mayor Richard Parker to champion everything that makes it such a great place to live, work and visit. Anyone who knows me knows how passionate I am about helping deliver a better future for the people I represent. I can promise everyone who calls the West Midlands home that we will build on our strengths to make sure all our communities benefit from the opportunities ahead." Mayor Richard Parker said, "Councillor Simpkins' experience and commitment to the community are why I asked him to join me as Deputy Mayor and support me in tackling the issues that matter most to our residents, creating good jobs, building affordable homes and delivering a transport system that works for everyone. Steve is an experienced leader and has been around the combined authority for a number of years. Together we will work with all members of the WMCA board and our partner local authorities to deliver on these priorities for the people of the West Midlands," added Mr. Parker. Foundation Building Support for Communities. An article by Becky Hume, your World Contributor. West Bromwich Building Society is delivering vital support to local communities across the West Midlands, investing over £465,000 in grassroots initiatives to help young people build brighter futures. As the charitable arm of West Brom Building Society, the foundation has funded a wide range of projects over the past year, focused on creating safe spaces, strengthening communities, and providing secure housing for those who need it most. The foundation's impact report highlights the difference the funding is making, showcasing the projects that are supporting young people, tackling vulnerability and helping to build stronger and more connected communities across the region. Jonathan Westhoff, West Bromwich Building Society's Foundation's Chair of Trustees, said, "Supporting local people and communities is at the heart of what we do. By backing projects that create opportunities and strengthen connections, we're helping to deliver lasting, positive change across the region. One initiative funded by the charity is the Safe Space Youth Cafe, based at YMCA Black Country Group's Coffee at the Clock in West Bromwich. Since opening in 2025, the cafe has welcomed more than 85 individual young people aged 11 to 16, with over 2,200 attendances recorded. The cafe offers a safe and supportive environment after school, where young people can take part in a range of activities and access guidance from a dedicated youth worker. The cafe has helped local young people build their confidence, develop new skills and take part in workshops ranging from sports to creative activities, with some even beginning basic barista training at the cafe. Shantania Colding, youth worker at the YMCA Youth Cafe, said, "Working at the Youth Cafe is an incredibly rewarding experience as it provides more than just a space. It fosters a supportive and inclusive community where young people feel safe, valued and encouraged to grow. Seeing their confidence and skills develop is a privilege. Alongside immediate community support, the Foundation is also investing in projects that will deliver long-term change. In partnership with Barnardo's, funding has been provided to support the development of 5 gap homes in Birmingham for young people leaving care. Care leavers are among the most vulnerable in society, with 1 in 3 experiencing homelessness within 2 years of leaving care. The Gap Homes initiative aims to address this by providing safe, secure, and energy-efficient accommodation, alongside ongoing support to help young people transition into independent living. Police: no excuse for abuse as World Cup gets into swing. Police are reminding football fans there is no excuse for domestic violence as the World Cup gets into full swing. England's first game in the tournament, which kicked off on Thursday, is on Wednesday night. Black Country Women's Aid has said that it is prepared for a rise in domestic violence, sharing statistics that when England men's team plays, incidents rise by 26%, and when they lose, they increase by 38%. On Facebook, West Midlands Police has urged fans to consider their behaviour. The Force posted, "Whatever team you follow, and whatever the result, it's fine to be happy or disappointed, but it's not fine for you to take your feelings out on the ones you love. No matter the score, there's absolutely no excuse for abuse. If you think that the results of any games will affect your behaviour and the way you act around your loved ones, though, it's time to get help." In a previous statement, Detective Inspector Charlie Sparks from the Force's Public Protection Unit said, "Domestic abuse can devastate the lives of a partner, children and other loved ones, both now and in the future. We want everyone to be able to enjoy the football safely this summer without being in fear. It's fine to be happy, frustrated or disappointed following a football match, but what's not fine is for you to take the feelings out on your loved ones. We never underestimate the impact of domestic abuse, and that's why we're committed to supporting victims and catching perpetrators."
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This article of Good News for Parasport has been written by Heather and is read by Alastair Hutton. Parasport has been in the headlines recently with 2 major announcements that will help UK athletes prepare for the next Paralympics in 2028. First is the chance for our para-athletes to gain valuable experience of international competition at this year's Commonwealth Games, which will start in Glasgow on the 23rd of July 2026. And second is the allocation of significant extra funding from UK Sport to support training and development for competitors who hope to represent Team GB at the 2028 Paralympics in Los Angeles. Glasgow's decision to host this year's Commonwealth Games offered a lifeline for the competition after the original Australian hosts pulled out because of rising costs. Although the Glasgow event will be slightly smaller than other recent Commonwealth Games, there'll be a record number of parasports medals to be won. There'll be 47 para medals up for grabs across 6 parasports, and for the first time ever, a parasport powerlifting will receive the first medal of the competition. The other 5 para competitions in Glasgow will be 3x3 wheelchair basketball, para-athletics, para-bowls, para-swimming and para-track cycling. And in another first for Glasgow, the medals awarded will be the first Commonwealth Games medals to feature Braille. Olympic and Paralympic medals have previously included Braille, but this is the first time it's been used at the Commonwealth Games. The medals have been designed by artist Milica Milikova from the Glasgow School of Art, and in addition to Braille lettering, the triangular-shaped medals also include other tactile features celebrating Glasgow, such as the Finiston Crane landmark and tartan. Now, looking further ahead to the 2028 Paralympics in Los Angeles, UK Sport has announced funding boosts for several parasports to help our athletes prepare. In total, an additional £4 million is being provided this year, divided between 16 sports. The biggest winner from the extra funding is climbing, which will receive an extra £1.4 million. That's a 60% increase, because UK Sport believes it is a discipline where the UK has significant future medal potential. As part of the new funding for climbing, paraclimbing, included in the 2028 Paralympics for the first time, will receive £500,000. At the top of the table for total funding in the parasport world are para-athletics and para-swimming. While the £9.8 million funding for para-athletics is not set to benefit from the newly announced extra funding, an additional £45,000 for para-swimming will see their total funding rise to £9.2 million. Other parasports gaining from a share of the extra £4 million include VI Judo, receiving an extra £202,500, and Para Badminton, gaining an extra £193,600. Para Canoeing will receive an extra £112,000, and Wheelchair Fencing will receive an extra £32,000. UK Sport says the money will play a critical part in enabling British athletes to deliver their best performances in the USA in 2 years' time. The organisation stressed that this funding is essential to ensuring that Britain can continue to compete in the top rank of Olympic and Paralympic sport.
TNS Soundings.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for the audio described television programmes for Saturday the 20th of June to Friday the 26th of June. Compiled by Lisa and read by John. Please note we have included the World Cup matches in the listing as they have a full commentary. On BBC One, on Saturday the 20th, you can catch up with Bargain Hunt at 12 noon and switch across to BBC Two for Homes Under the Hammer at 1:15. There's also James Martin's Islands to Highlands at 12:35 on ITV One when the celebrity chef takes a trip on the luxury train. Football kicks off at 5:30pm on BBC One with live coverage of the Netherlands versus Sweden, followed by Casualty at 8:30 when Cam has a difficult conversation with Indy. Then there's Part 6 of the drama 2 weeks in August at 9:20, when the group become trapped inside the villa by a heatwave. At 10:25, the complete second series of Fun Boys airs with all four episodes of the Irish comedy shown back-to-back. ITV1 has the World Cup action at 8pm with Germany versus the Ivory Coast. Over on Channel 4 at 5:55pm, there's a gentle comedy sequel, Fisherman's Friends, One and All, starring James Purefoy. The Cornish Sea Shanty Singers work through the pressures of their newfound success. Followed by a documentary at 8pm, John Snow, A Last Big Story, in which the veteran journalist comes to terms with his recent Alzheimer's diagnosis. Then there's another film at 9:35, Military Wives, starring Kirsten Scott Thomas in a comedy drama based on a true story. Now for Sunday. BBC Two has two cookery programmes with Mary Berry Cook and Cher at 11:35am, followed by Andy Oliver's Fabulous Feasts at 12:05. Then there's Bargain Hunt at 1:15, and ITV1 has Love Your Garden at 11:30am, when the team create a wildlife wonderland in West Bromwich. On BBC One at 4:30, it's Spain versus Saudi Arabia, and at 9:15 it's the final episode of Death Valley, starring Timothy Spall. At a memorial service for a rugby club groundsman, another death shocks the attendees. Then it's back to football at 10:30 with Uruguay versus Cape Verde. Explore the hidden treasures of the National Trust over on BBC Two at 5:15pm, focusing on the legendary garden of the designer Gertrude Jekyll. And at 8:15 there's Expedition with Steve Backshall, exploring the remote parts of the planet in search of natural wonders. This is followed by the final episode of the Scottish drama Barlinnie at 9pm. ITV1 has the classic movie action at 4:20 with Goldfinger, starring Sean Connery as 007 James Bond, followed by more World Cup at 7 p.m. when Belgium play Iran. Plenty of alternatives are on Channel 4, starting with Billy and Molly, an otter love story, at 4:25 p.m. The story of a couple moving to Shetland and forming an unlikely bond with a wild otter. There's Kirsty and Phil's Brilliant Builds at 6 p.m. and at 7 p.m. The Great Celebrity Bake Off features Jodie Whittaker and Paloma Faith, followed by Cruising to the End of the Earth at 8 p.m. This week visiting Japan and Alaska. Then there's part two of Free Nelson Mandela at 9 p.m. focusing on the song that became the anthem to the global fight for Nelson Mandela's freedom. Finally, catch up with Celebrity Gogglebox at 10 as the armchair critics share their thoughts. Now turning to this week's soap schedule, which will be slightly different to fit round football. Monday, it's EastEnders at 8:30 p.m. on BBC One and Emmerdale and Corrie on ITV One at 8 and 9 p.m. respectively. Tuesday has EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. and Emmerdale and Corrie at 9 and 9:30 p.m. Wednesday has EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. Thursday has EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. and Emmerdale at 8 p.m. and Corrie at 9. Moving on to Monday the 22nd of June, BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15 and Bargain Hunt at 12:15, which this time comes from Weatherby. Football takes over again at 5:30 with Argentina versus Austria, and another big match at 9:30 when France play Iraq. Some nice alternatives on BBC Two, beginning with the Great Continental Railway Journeys, in which Michael Portello visits Switzerland. There's Millionaire Superyacht, Why Ships Sink at 8 p.m., followed by the always interesting Lucy Worsley at 9 p.m. in Jack the Ripper, Lucy Worsley Investigates. The historian reveals how the infamous murders of the 1880s influenced how crime is covered in the media today. Then at 10 p.m, it's the gentle charm of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing, when Bob and Paul accept a special invitation to Burley House. ITV1 has part four of Changing Ends, starring National Treasure Alan Carr as himself at 7:30 p.m, whilst over on Channel 4 at 4 p.m, it's Narrow Escapes, in which Chef Fergus begins transforming his boat into a floating ice cream parlour, followed by Chateau DIY at 5 p.m, and then at 8 p.m. is a brand new series of Dover 24/7, Britain's busiest port. So to Tuesday. BBC One has a double bill of Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30 and Bargain Hunt at 12:15, whilst over on ITV One at 2, Dickinson's Real Deal visits Bridlington. Back to BBC One at 3 p.m. for Escape to the Country, when Andrew and Will hope to escape their busy Oxfordshire town for scenic Devon. At 4:30 p.m, the travelling auctioneers help a mother and a daughter sell the family treasures to fund a home extension. Two big football matches on BBC One this evening when England kick off against Ghana at 8 p.m. Can Harry Kane add to his goal tally? Panama and Croatia are the other two teams in England's group. They kick off at 11:50 p.m. Over on BBC Two, Michael Portello continues his tour of Switzerland in Great Continental Railway Journeys at 6:30. And at 8 p.m. it's Digging for Britain with Alice Roberts. A double episode of Scamander airs at 9 p.m. when Amanda's web of lies begins to unravel. ITV One has Portugal versus Uzbekistan at 5 p.m. and another episode of Changing Ends at 8:35 when Christine's Tupperware party takes a rowdy turn. We've all been there. It's Chateau DIY at 5 p.m. on Channel 4 and at 8 p.m. part 5 of Bake Off, The Professionals. This week, the teams make Bakewell slices. This is followed by part three of the drama Light in the Hall, Still Waters, at 9 p.m. when Carol faces a crisis. It's Wednesday and BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, followed by Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Then it's Escape to the Country at 3, when a couple search for a home in rural Lincolnshire. Over on ITV One at 2 p.m, Dickinson's Real Deal visits Solihull. BBC One has the enduringly popular Repair Shop at 8 p.m. and a big match for Scotland at 10 p.m. when they play Brazil. At 6:30 p.m. on BBC Two, Michael Portello visits Zurich in his Great Continental Railway Journeys, and at 8 p.m. Rob Rinder and Monica Galletti are in Shanghai for Amazing Hotels Life Beyond the Lobby. Another football match at 10:50 when Morocco play Haiti. ITV One offers Switzerland versus Canada at 7 p.m. and nothing else. So it's over to Channel 4 for Narrow Escapes at 4 p.m. when Graham battles the incoming storms, and Chateau DIY at 5 p.m. Then there's part four of The Light in the Hall, Still Waters, at 9 p.m, followed by Night Coppers at 10, when rookie Matt and his partner Will attend a case of suspected arson in Brighton. Now for Thursday. Catchmore homes under the hammer at 11:15 on BBC One and Bargain Hunt at 12:15. This time they're in Hungerford, whilst Dickinson's Real Deal visits Weston-super-Mare over on ITV One at 2 p.m. The evening schedule on BBC One is taken over again by World Cup, with Ecuador versus Germany at 8:30 and Tunisia versus Netherlands at 11:50 for Night Owl football fans. Thank goodness for Michael Portillo on BBC Two at 6:30, still gamingly touring his way around Switzerland. At 9 p.m. it's Saving Lives at Sea, this week responding to an emergency in Eastbourne Marina where a boat catches fire. More football at 8:50 when Curacao play Ivory Coast. ITV1's sole offering is the final episode of Alan Carr's Changing Ends at 7:30. More Shadow DIY at 5 p.m. on Channel 4. And at 8 p.m. it's George Clark's Beautiful Builds, this time visiting a renovation in Bedfordshire. Much darker fare at 9 p.m. with 24 hours in police custody. And the crime theme continues at 10 p.m. with The Accused, Beyond Reasonable Doubt. And now it's Friday, 26th of June. BBC One has the usual Homes Under the Hammer, Bargain Hunt double bill at 11:15 and 12:15 respectively. Then there's the final episode of Under the Vines at 2 p.m, then Escape to the Country at 2:45. An interesting documentary at 7:30 p.m, What Happened at the Somme? Jordan Dunbar marks the 110th anniversary of their battle by speaking to those who are still discovering the truth about the First World War, followed by a total contrast at 8 p.m, by Sort Your Life Out with Stacey Solomon. Catch up with the long-running cosy crime series Death in Paradise at 9 p.m, when a body is discovered on a golf course. On BBC Two at 6:30, Marco Portillo is still in Switzerland, this time travelling from Interlaken to the Swiss Riviera. A highlight for wildlife lovers is My Tiger Family, which tells the epic story of an Indian tiger clan and its five most powerful tigresses in the Indian state of Rajasthan. Then at 10, it's another episode of the darkly comic Inside Number 9, starring Steve Pemberton and Rhys Shearsmith. ITV1 again concentrates on football. The big match this evening is Norway versus France at 7 p.m. More Narrow Escapes on Channel 4 at 4 p.m. and Shatter DIY at 5 p.m. It's part 5 of Our Farm Next Door at 8 p.m. when Amanda, Clive and the kids are making the most of the school holidays, followed by Celebrity Gogglebox at 9 with more wit and wisdom from the armchair critics. Then First Dates rounds off the schedule at 10 p.m. This week, uber-confident boss Joe is introduced to champion speed skater Keith. What could possibly go wrong? And that concludes this week's AD TV listings. Obviously heavily dominated by the World Cup, but hopefully you found something for non-football fans as well.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, June 20th. A Fatal Inversion, dramatisation of the award-winning 1987 crime novel by Ruth Rendell, published under her Barbara Vine alias. It's 1976 and an idyllic hot summer for Adam and his friends. But when the weather breaks, lives are wrecked. Radio 4 Extra, 5 o'clock, Saturday afternoon. Opera on 3 presents a Royal Opera House performance from last month of Britain's breakthrough opera, Peter Grimes, in an Olivier-nominated production by Deborah Warner, first staged in 2022, which shifts the action from the 19th century to a depressed contemporary coastal town. Alan Clayton as Peter Grimes, Bryn Terfel as Captain Balstrode, and Maria Begston as Ellen Orford. Opera on 3, Radio 3, 6 p.m. Finally for Saturday, Midsummer Dreaming, from sunset to sunrise on the summer solstice. Verity Shah presents a dreamlike night of radio documentaries from Radio 3's archives, a celebration of the vast imaginative possibilities of the radio, and between the years, Radio 3's own strand of innovative feature-making that was launched in 1993. Midsummer Dreaming, Radio 3, 9:30, Saturday night. Sunday, June 21st, 10 years after Brexit, Tribal, a thought-provoking analysis by Professor James Tilley on how the referendum forced people to pick a side, creating two identities and demonstrating the impact of tribalism in politics. 10 years after Brexit, Tribal, Radio 4, 1:30, Sunday afternoon. Radio 3's Sunday feature is entitled Leon Bosch, the Double Bass and the Children of Soweto. In 1976, the British South African double bassist Leon Bosch took part in the Soweto Uprising, which led to his incarceration and eventual self-exile from his home country. 50 years later, he explores how he learnt to confront trauma and speak through the voice of his instrument. Sunday feature, Radio 3, 7 p.m. And if we can walk together, the story of how a Palestinian and an Israeli, both of whom have lost family members to violence, are together searching for peace. They discuss their efforts to build peace and understanding between themselves and through their communities, what cost of it is, and how they deal with the legacy of historic hatred and enmity. 7:15, Radio 4, Sunday night. On to programmes then, and the broadcast at the same time each day, all week, Monday to Friday. So same time, same radio station, each day. Metamorphosis, how insects transformed our world. Radio 4 Extra, all week, Monday to Friday, 9:30. How to spot potential. Kate Mason explores human potential in different fields, beginning with sport and continuing with education, music, the world of work and technology. Radio 4, 11:45 in the morning, Monday to Friday. In Tony Hawk's Just Wants to Play, the comedian explores the barriers preventing everyone from accessing play, sport and nature in the UK. The first episode focuses on Wimbledon and whether Britain's tennis culture is truly accessible to everyone. Radio 4, 1:45, all week, Monday to Friday, Tony Hawk's Just Wants to Play. Henry Purcell is the subject of Composer of the Week, and Donald MacLeod explores London during Purcell's lifetime, investigating the city's effect on the man who lay claim to being England's greatest composer. Radio 3, Composer of the Week, 4 o'clock, all week. This week's The Essay is entitled Jazz Among the British. This series, produced in 2020 by jazz specialist broadcaster Geoffrey Smith, who died in April, explores the changing perceptions and appreciation of jazz in Britain through his experience as an American settling in the UK in 1973. The Essay, Radio 3, all week, Monday to Friday, 9:45 p.m. And Book of Bedtime continues, Land by Maggie O'Farrell, the latest offering from the author of Hamnet, which of course recently on at the cinema. Book of Bedtime, Radio 4, Land, 10:45 p.m. On to the rest of the radio highlights for the week, for each individual day. Monday, June 22nd. A new series of The Patch, in which producers visit parts of the country chosen by a random postcode generator, begins with Dagenham Dock, where they discover a battle between HGV drivers and a parking fine company. 11 a.m, Monday morning, Radio 4. In 10 years after Brexit, Ireland and the Border Poll, Belfast-born Andrea Catherwood explores changing attitudes to a united Ireland in the wake of Brexit, re-examining the broken promises and new trading arrangements in the Irish Sea. 4 o'clock, Monday afternoon, Radio 4. And Limelight and Galapagos, a five-part play by Andrew Day and Simon Scardfield. Bryony is offered the job of a lifetime, but who is her new employer? 11 o'clock, Monday night, Radio 4. Tuesday, June 23rd. Being Greek is a new five-part series presented by Mary Beard. Five compelling stories from ancient Greece, beginning with a courtroom drama. Euphilates, on trial for the murder of his wife's lover, tried to convince the jury that it was a crime of passion rather than a calculated act of mob violence. Radio 4, Being Greek, 9 a.m, Tuesday. I'm Stuck in Here is a delightful documentary about Ian Sansom, finding himself stuck in audio documentaries. One moment he's in a London sewer with a man called Gary, the next he's in the Australian outback with a producer who avoids birdsong, and finds himself sipping whiskey with American ladies who love cats. Radio 4 Extra on Tuesday, 10:30 in the morning, 4:30 in the afternoon, or just after midnight if you prefer. In the studio, acclaimed musician Sean Cooney, winner of 3 BBC Radio 2 Folk Awards, explains why he's decided to craft an album devoted entirely to dogs. Hollywood stars and real-life heroes, including his wife's guide dog, Nessie, who's just retired after 8 years' service. In the studio, 1:30, World Service, on Tuesday afternoon, or 10:30 at night. And don't forget, as it's a Tuesday, In Touch, The programme of news for the blind and partially sighted, 8:40pm, Radio 4. Wednesday, June 24th. Scoop, the story of ice cream, from disputes about the origins of the 99 in the 1920s to the Glasgow ice cream wars of the 80s, and what makes the perfect gelato. And did Margaret Thatcher really help to invent Mr. Whippy? 10am or 4pm, Radio 4 Extra. Also on Wednesday, in Finding Sea Glass, Hannah Lavery performs her poetic exploration of Scottish history through the prism of the loss of her father and her experiences of growing up mixed race. 2:15, Wednesday afternoon, Radio 4. Radio 3 in Concert presents a concert for May 16th at the Bridgewater Hall in Manchester, featuring the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra in a programme of Scandinavian music. Sibelius's Violin Concerto, Nielsen's Fifth Symphony, and Ratavora's Cantus Arcticus, 7:30pm, Radio 3. Thursday, June 25th. With the FIFA World Cup in full swing, football enthusiasts may be interested in the documentary Agony and Ecstasy, A History of Penalty Shootouts. Football, in its purest form, is one view of the dreaded penalty shootout, which can flip between euphoria and despair in seconds. 9:30, Thursday morning, or 8:05, Thursday evening, on the World Service. In this week's episode of Ramblings, Claire Balding is joined by the CEO of Natural England, Marianne Spain, and Paula Brunt, a campaigner with Disabled Ramblers, as she explores a stretch of the King Charles III English Coast Past in West Sussex, from Bosham to West Itchener. 3 o'clock, Radio 4, Ramblings. And Radio 3 in Concert features a concert for May 10th at the Queen Elizabeth Hall in London, the BBC Concert Orchestra in programme, including Brahms' Third Symphony and Sibelius's Cariella Suite. 7:30pm, Radio 3, Thursday night. Finally, Friday, June 26th, and this week's edition of the food programme focuses on the weight of the world, exploring why obesity has become a global problem, changing relationships with food and reasons for optimism. 11am, Radio 4 on Friday. Patrick Trelawney presents Friday Night Is Music Night with the BBC Concert Orchestra, playing music that has a connection with Brighton Dome, which opened in 1867. The programme includes music by Elgar, Samuel Coleridge Taylor, Grieg, Vaughan Williams and William Walton. 7:30, Radio 3, Friday Night Is Music Night. It's also Free Thinking Night, the child's eye view, from navigating AI to living through war or the joy of reading. What makes children's perspectives so distinctive? Free Thinking, Radio 4, 9 o'clock, Friday night. That's it. Thank you to Leslie for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. News! Question 1. An Andy Warhol portrait of which royal is expected to sell for up to £115,900 at auction? Question 2. Which 80s synth pop band announced the release of a final studio album, Danceteria, which was finished just days before one half of the duo died in October 2025? Question 3. Which Sesame Street character was criticised after saying, "I hope both teams have fun," when the New York Knicks and San Antonio Spurs battled in the NBA Championship Finals? Sport! Question 4. How many times did Serena Williams win the Wimbledon's women's singles title? Question 5. Who is the UFC heavyweight champion? Remember when? Question 7. Prince Charles was born. Harry Truman was elected US president. The railways were nationalised. And communists seized power in Czechoslovakia. Question 7. Kenya achieved independence. The first ever episode of Doctor Who was transmitted. 2.6 million was stolen in the Great Train Robbery, and Valentina Tereshkova became the first woman in space. Who am I? Question 8. An author, I was born in Ireland in 1940. My writing career began after some of my travel letters were published in a newspaper, and I went on to become one of Ireland's best-loved authors. My other works include The Glass Lake, Tara Road, and Circle of Friends, which was made into a 1995 film starring Minnie Driver and Chris O'Donnell. Question 9. I am an actress born in Los Angeles in 1958. I am a godmother to the actor Jake Gyllenhaal. Like my mother, I rose to fame after a starring role in a cult horror movie. I have since gone on to win an Academy Award, a BAFTA, and 2 Golden Globes, with leading roles in films such as Forever Young, True Lies, and A Fish Called Wanda. But who am I? Local knowledge. Question 10. This month, which Black Sabbath member opened the envelope containing his recent MBE for services to music and charity and confessed, "I thought it was a speeding fine, to be honest." How's your knowledge in this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers to this week's quiz. News. Question 1. An Andy Warhol portrait of which royal is expected to sell for up to £115,900 at auction? The late Queen. Question 2. Which 80s synth pop band announced the release of a final studio album, Danceteria, which was finished just days before one half of the duo died in October 2025? Soft Cell, Dave Bell and Mark Almond. Question 3. Which Sesame Street character was criticised after saying, "I hope both teams have fun," when the New York Knicks and San Antonio Spurs battled in the NBA Championship Finals? Elmo. Sport. Question 4. How many times did Serena Williams win the Wimbledon's women's singles title? 7. Question 5. Who is the UFC heavyweight champion? Thomas Aspinall. Remember when? Question 7. Prince Charles was born. Harry Truman was elected US president. The railways were nationalized. And communists seized power in Czechoslovakia. 1948. Question 7. Kenya achieved independence. The first ever episode of Doctor Who was transmitted. 2.6 million was stolen in the Great Train Robbery, and Valentina Tereshkova became the first woman in space. 1963. Who am I? Question 8. An author, I was born in Ireland in 1940. My writing career began after some of my travel letters were published in a newspaper, and I went on to become one of Ireland's best-loved authors. My other works include The Glass Lake, Tara Road, and Circle of Friends, which was made into a 1995 film starring Minnie Driver and Chris O'Donnell. Maeve Binchy. Question 9. I am an actress born in Los Angeles in 1958. I am a godmother to the actor Jake Gyllenhaal. Like my mother, I rose to fame after a starring role in a cult horror movie. I have since gone on to win an Academy Award, a BAFTA and 2 Golden Globes, with leading roles in films such as Forever Young, True Lies and A Fish Called Wanda. But who am I? Jamie Lee Curtis. Local knowledge. Question 10. This month, which Black Sabbath member opened the envelope containing his recent MBE for services to music and charity and confessed, "I thought it was a speeding fine, to be honest." Tomi Iommi. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Hi, this is Kate, and I'll be recording you some articles from the 16th of June. Arrest made over serious assault. A man in his 50s was taken to hospital with injuries believed to be life-threatening after being seriously assaulted in Smethwick, West Midlands police have said. Officers were called to St Paul's Road in Smethwick shortly before 8:30pm on Sunday, the 14th of June. A man in his 50s was found seriously injured. A 45-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of wounding and remains in custody for questioning. The force added, "We are in the early stages of our investigation and we remain at the scene to conduct a thorough search to understand exactly what happened. We would ask anyone who may have been in the area at the time or who has any information to get in touch with us by calling 101, quoting incident number 3929 of 14 June. You can also call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. Man accused of driving offences. A man has been charged with dangerous driving after a car failed to stop for officers and drove dangerously in Albury. Tony Wharton, age 52, of no fixed address, has been charged with dangerous driving, failing to stop and having no insurance. Wharton was bailed with conditions and will appear at Dudley Magistrate Court on the 14th of July. The charge comes after officers from West Midlands Police's road crime team were out on patrol in the Samwell area on Wednesday, June the 10th, and stopped the car on Grafton Road following a pursuit. Another man, aged 17, was also arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs. He has since been bailed while inquiries continue. Dispersal order put in place as police called over motorbikes. Police have issued a dispersal order in Tipton due to antisocial behaviour. West Midlands Police said they were called on Sunday afternoon, June the 14th, to reports of a large group of people riding motorbikes in an antisocial manner on the High Street in Tipton. Officers spoke to the group and put a dispersal order in place. A video shared on Facebook shows multiple police cars on the road. Locals in the comments claimed the gathering was being held at the time for a man who had passed away. One user shared an image that included details for the gathering. It said, "Please join us as we celebrate his life and share cherished memories. Bikes, cars, anything welcome." The location for the gathering was listed as Prince's End in Tipton. However, other users commented about the antisocial behaviour that occurred. One woman wrote, "I understand they was doing a tribute for a man who lost his life, but my 4-year-old was nearly hit by a motorbike whilst we was crossing at the traffic lights because the lad had decided to come through a red light doing a wheelie. Luckily, I pulled my son out of the way in time." Another man commented, "We drove through earlier and it was crazy. A chap holding fireworks or rockets and letting them off." Police said in a statement, "We were called to a report of a large group of people riding motorbikes in an antisocial manner on High Street, Tipton. Officers spoke to the group and put a dispersal order in place." Police make 400 arrests in domestic abuse crackdown. Week-long force operation aims to protect victims and bring offenders to justice. More than 400 people have been arrested across the West Midlands as police launched a major operation aimed at protecting victims of domestic abuse and bringing offenders to justice. West Midlands Police said the week-long crackdown resulted in over 400 arrests linked to domestic abuse offences, with officers carrying out targeted activity across the force area to locate wanted suspects and safeguard those at risk. The operation came as officers step up efforts to tackle domestic abuse ahead of the World Cup period, when concerns often increase about a rise in incidents of violence and coercive behaviour in the home. Police say they're determined to prevent offenders from using major sporting events as an excuse for abusive behaviour. Throughout the campaign, officers carried out warrants, made proactive arrests and worked closely with specialist teams to support victims. The force said that domestic abuse remains one of its key priorities. Detective teams also continue to pursue evidence-led investigations, meaning suspects can still face prosecution even when victims feel unable or unwilling to support a case because of fear or intimidation. Earlier this year, West Midlands Police reported charging almost 400 suspects through this approach. The latest arrests form a wider part of effort by the force to tackle violence against women and girls and protect vulnerable people across the region. Dedicated domestic abuse teams have already secured dozens of convictions in recent months, with many offenders receiving prison sentences. Police are urging anyone experiencing domestic abuse or who are concerned about someone they know to report it and seek support. Anyone in immediate danger should call 999. Mud, glorious mud. All smiles as hundreds brave Pretty Muddy 5K. It was a morning of climbing, crawling and sliding through mud as hundreds of charity fundraisers took on a unique obstacle course at Samwell Valley Country Park. The Samwell Pretty Muddy 5K brought together participants of all ages on Saturday as runners tackled a challenging course around the park featuring a series of obstacles, including a plunge into a muddy pit near the finish line. The annual event, organised by Cancer Research UK as part of its Pretty Muddy series, raised more than £250,000 for life-saving cancer research. Many participants embraced the occasion by dressing in pink and colourful outfits, adding to the fun of the atmosphere of the day while supporting a vital cause. Here are a selection of images from the event. For more, visit expressandstar.com. This article is supported by loads of photos. The first photograph is five children who look like they've come down a big pink inflatable slide, big enough obviously for them all to go down. It looks like they've all reached the bottom and splashed through a big load of muddy water, but they're all smiling and looking very happy. Another photo, again, is the same thing where there's a lady flying down the slide with her eyes closed as she lands in that pool of muddy, dirty water. Then you've got a third photograph, and there is a woman who looks like she slid down the big pink slide and gone head first into the water. And all you can see is her feet sticking up. And there's a gentleman there doing the same thing. But he looks like he's just about to go into the water. And he's got his mouth open and it looks like he's screaming in that photograph. There's another photograph of two young girls who had participated in the event. And they're standing there together, lifting their arms up as if to show their muscles. They're also covered in mud. You have another two ladies who are sliding down the big slide. They look absolutely filthy, covered in mud. They look a bit shocked as they land in a big pool of muddy water. You've got another photograph of a young boy this time. He's come head first down the big pink inflatable slide, and the photograph catches him just as he's going into the water, face first, head first. He's got his eyes closed and his arms are already in. So as soon as that photo would have been taken, I think his head would have been straight in that water. And then we've got another photograph of three grown-up men all sort of fist pumping and hitting the air. And they're also holding a sign to say why they're supporting the event and what they're doing. And then the last photograph is two young boys caked in mud, but very happy. They've got their medals on that you must get at the end, and their sort of participant number clipped to their T-shirts, and they're embracing each other with their arms in around each other, looking very happy with themselves for having completed the course.
OK, my name's Heather Wastey, and I'm a poet and a songwriter, and I was born in Cradley Heath. Anybody know Cradley Heath?
Yes.
Oh, Boston.
I used to do the Speedway years ago.
OK, right, I live the other side of the bog to the Speedway. I think dialect is really important, and that's why I wanted to include some dialect pieces in the book, and I'm going to do some dialect pieces now. And it's easier to listen than it is to read, actually. So in 2015, I was asked to write this poem for something called International Mother Language Day, which they were doing in Birmingham at the library, in, you know, the other side of the border in Birmingham, not the Black Country. And the people from all different countries there are speaking all different languages, and they wanted me to do Black Country dialect, and I was really proud. And I decided I would try writing 37 Hollywood Street, that poem, again, but thinking in dialect rather than in standard English. And I'm going to perform the poem that came out of that. It's called Takes Me Back. This poem takes me back to terraced houses on an hill, with front rooms kept for Sunday best and big fat windowsills. This poem takes me back to coal in the coal hole, wood in the stove, an entree, a fold, and an outside loo, pikelets on a fork, toasted with love. This poem takes me back to disembodied voices torturing God once a week down the mission, the valeting bull, the drop bomber's thud. This poem takes me back to Alice, marching past our window to help Mr. Williams, who is short of one leg, taking him maiden two veg for his dinner. This poem takes me back to the woman who wanted to bury our phone, to make assignations with men, because I had one of her own, near a mon, near a phone. This poem takes me back to trips up the road to Dingley's shaft, where I like to say, cheese, please, Louise, in me head, as her cut off a slab. This poem takes me back to our painted lady with pitch black hair, a buxom wench, all is tarted up, I can still see her standing there. This poem takes me back to the only building still left standing, the pub, that I did go in as a child, but I do now. You could call it Bonding City. So that was my poem about my street, where I grew up in Cradley. So I'm going to take you inside the house now. Oh, before I do, I said a word in there, and I want to find out how many of you know what it means, fold. Do you know what a fold is? Now, I didn't know until a few years ago, and my mum told me. It's the yard. The yard at the back of your house is called a fold. It's interesting, isn't it? I think it comes from the word fold, like sheep fold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? So that's the fold. So let me find the page that's got this next poem I'm going to do on it. It's got a picture of my auntie, and she's inside our front room, 37 Hollywood Street. I'm just trying to find it. There it is. So she's sitting, it's another black and white photo, sitting right next to the telly. On the top of the telly there's a goldfish bowl, and a little bunch of flowers on the windowsill. I remember the curtains as well. And she's got my doll. My dolly on her lap. My doll was called Pat, which is strange because one of my characters is called Pat. So, yeah, I've had this name Pat in my head since I was a little girl. So this poem is called Surfaces. In the days of Corona, mother's pride, the betterware man and milk on the step. The bread man brought bread, the coal man brought coal, so the dustman must have delivered dust. Dust to be brushed on the mantelpiece top, arranged on the hearth and the windowsill. Dust to be stroked over black and white keys, printed on music stand, wiped on the lid. Dirt to be sprinkled on quarry tile floors, stepped into the cellar under the stairs. Soot for the Eubank, ash for the ashtray, fluff for the stylus, grit for the budgie, sawdust for hamsters, soil on our knees, and for growing potatoes inside our ears. Did anybody say that to you when you were a kid? You could grow potatoes in the ears. Well, yeah, I think I did have dirty ears when I was a kid. I'm a bit cleaner now. Yes, our house was dusty, but it wasn't because Mum didn't clean it. It was because we got the cooperage next door and there was all this sawdust coming in from the factory. She couldn't keep up with it. So I thought I'd do you a poem which takes you inside the cooperage. Anybody ever been next to someone when they're making a barrel? It's a really noisy occupation. And my dad told me about a cooper called Jack, and he described his tools, how he worked. And I've got some other memories as well from people who knew the coopers. This poem's called Cooper Jack. Imagine 40 years of hammering hoops, circling a barrel round and round. Every day the steady tread, wearing down the bricks with his boots. Pick up his hammer, highly polished head all twisted, shaft worn down where fingers and thumb have slid on wood and almost pushed right through the stale. His drivers, nails, his fitments, all his tools hang on the wall above a timber block where his chalk rests. Morning. Watch as he fills the stove with sawdust, lights the only source of heat. Smell the burning, eyes streaming, cough to clear your throat. And when the flues are warm enough to draw the smoke, breathe in the scent of scorching wood. Then join the coopers singing, feel the beat of every stroke. Stand back, for when the hoop is firmly down, Jack will toss his hammer onto the block, another smack against the soft wood, cracking brick behind it with the force of years. I remember those coopers. They were very nice to me as a little girl when I went in to talk to them. So at the bottom of Hollybush Street, there was a chip shop. I used to go in there, and the man who ran it used to draw pictures on my hand while I was waiting for my chips. And how much do you think a bag of chips cost?
Ten.
Oh, less than that.
Threepence.
I remember taking a threepenny bit and buying a bag of chips. I love the old threepenny bits. You should bring them back, don't you?
Yeah.
And the cobblers. And I remember I used to go there to pick up my dad's shoes when he'd had them gobbled. It's not the right word, is it? Take them home in a brown paper bag. Now, somebody talked about the Speedway. Yes, you did, didn't you, about the Speedway. There was a clay bonk, a clay pit, between us and Dudley Wood, and that's where the Speedway was. Sometimes you could hear it if the wind was in the right direction, sometimes you couldn't. And I used to go, play on the bonk, and I used to go over the other side where my auntie lived, the one that's in the picture holding my doll. And when I visited, I watched her in the kitchen, and I used to help her sometimes, pounding butter and caster sugar together in a big bowl. And when she'd finished with the bowl, I used to love to run my finger around the inside for a sugary prelude to the scent of little sponge cakes cooking in the oven. I was told I shouldn't have a cake because it would spoil my dinner. I also remember shelling pays with my auntie. You know what pays are, don't you? Yeah, of course you do. So the title for this book is One Made, One Growed. Now, when I was speaking to Tony on the phone, he made an admission. He said, I don't actually know what One Made, One Growed means. Does anybody here know what One Made, One Growed means?
Made and grown one.
You're an old child?
No. But that was partly right. Somebody just said it.
Homemade.
Homegrown. Yeah. Warm is home. Made, and grown. One made, one grown. So that's me. I'm homemade, and I'm homegrown. And I love the black country, and I love the dialect. And I'm enjoying this cup of tea. Very nice. Cup of tea. So I'm going to sing the song called One Made, One Growed, which is the title piece from the book. And there is a little bit that comes back at the end of each verse. And if you want to join in on that with feeling, you might want to. We'll see. It doesn't have to be in tune or anything like that. You can just have some fun. So I'm just putting on my accordion. It's just a small accordion, because I'm only a small person. So I've got some keys like a piano on the one side, buttons on the other. And if I don't squeeze, I don't do that, nothing, no sound comes out. Sounds easy, doesn't it? I took it up in 2012. I used to play the piano, as you can probably tell from what I've just been telling you. Piano in our old house, I love to play. But obviously I can't bring the piano, so I take my accordion out with me. So this is a song called One Bed, One Ground. Old maid, on ground, one bed, one ground, like apples in a pie, and the tales that was told by mothers on the doorstep, who scrubbed it clean after, by feathers down the local, we fight smoke and laughter, by kids playing over the bock, we had a thought for money, one bed, one ground, and I ain't being funny when I says, don't call me a brummie. That's the bit you might want to join in on, possibly. One bed, one ground, all made, all grown, like the fat pods we popped, shelling pies we with thumbs, earing and spattering into a bowl, then eating them raw, shells and pies are old, like cows make milk and bees make honey. One bed, one ground, and I being funny when I says, don't call me a bread. One ground, one maid, one ground, one maid, like me at gloves and scarf, and the thoughts in me head, buying cheese and butter and suck from the shop that was just up our street. Now it high on a map as I played in the horse road and said, "Mum, not mummy, one mid, one ground, and I ain't being funny when I says, don't call me a brummie. One ground, one mid, all grown, all made, wooden barrels, iron chain, good black country trade. Now I sigh in brummies, and better all us. So you might wonder why I would make such a fuss. It's a common mistake, but they were made like us. One mid, one ground, and I being funny. And I says, don't call me a brummie. One bed, one ground, and I ain't being funny when I says, don't call me a brummie. Thank you. Thanks for joining in. We haven't got any brummies in the room, have we?
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Penny Melville Brown from Baking Blind and all sorts of other things. I'm going to give you some real recipes that I cook in my kitchen, and I have no sight at all, so if I can do it, you might be able to manage some of them. You can find my recipes on pennymelvillebrown.com. Here is a very simple basis for a roast lunch. I'm not going to get into all the stuffing and the vegetables, but let's just do a roast chicken with roast potatoes and roast parsnips. So the first thing I do is I've got a fresh chicken or a defrosted one, and you take all the wrapping off it. So you've got perhaps some elastic around its legs. Take all that off because you want your chicken to spread its legs so it can get lots of heat all the way down the thighs. And I then measure 60 grams of salt into a plastic box, a large plastic box. And mine, I use 4 litre ice cream boxes. And into that goes a litre of water, and into that goes your chicken. Pop the lid on, put it in the fridge, leave it there overnight. And this is about brining a chicken. And what you're doing is helping to plump up all the cells in the chicken. And this came from Heston Blumenthal years ago. And I've used it all the time since then. If you go mad, you can put some herbs and stuff in there. But I don't bother, just the salt and the water. So that's in the fridge overnight. Now, on that same day, the day before I'm cooking, I'm going to prepare my potatoes for roast potatoes and my parsnips. Now, I confess, quite a lazy cook, and I certainly don't like washing up. So I'm going to use a deep foil dish that I can throw away once it's been used. I don't have to wash it up. And I'm also going to use either goose fat or duck fat, or you could use lard, but you're going to need to have it a bit liquid. We'll come to that in a minute. So potatoes peeled, cut up to the right size, parboiled in their water with a bit of salt. And when they're parboiled, so that's about 5 minutes at most, you lift them out, drain them, and you shuggle them in the pan. Now, this, of course, is a very technical phrase, shuggling, because what you're trying to do is rough up the edges a little bit so they go crispy. In they go into my foil dish, and then I'm going to use my duck fat or my goose fat, and I'm going to turn them over. Now, it's a bit hot at this stage because they've just boiled, but just let them cool a little, and they'll melt the fat, and it'll start coating them. And at the same time, I'm doing my parsnips, which I've already peeled, quartered, popped into the pan, boiling water, boiled for about 5 minutes or so, drained. Now, depends how many you've eaten for lunch, but I would have, for a few people, you can put them in with the potatoes. And what I do with the parsnips, just like the potatoes, is turn them over in the fat. Because the whole point is that you are creating an oxygen-tight seal around the potato, around the parsnips, with the fat. So oxygen can't go in and oxidate the potato or the parsnip, which makes it start going to taste stale. That's not what we want at all. So turn all those vegetables over a couple of times. I often get a lid with my foil dish, pop the lid on, throw it in the fridge next to my chicken, walk away. That wasn't too much, was it? Not too much work at all. So next day, let's assume we're going to have lunch at about 1 o'clock. So by 9 o'clock, I'm in the kitchen and I'm going to fish out my box with the chicken, drain it. I will often have made some butter and salt and pepper and herbs and perhaps some lemon zest and some lemon juice. Stuff that under the skin, over the breast. Metal tin, chicken into tin, stuff it in the oven. And that's that done. But the important thing is I'm going to set that oven very low. I would set it at gas mark 1, about 170 to 100 degrees Celsius. So it's very cool. And that chicken is just going to sit there for 3 hours. Later on, I will get out my probe thermometer, and I've got a talking one, and I push it into the chicken at the thickest part. So I will be into the thigh and perhaps low down in the breast. And I'm being careful not to touch the bone because bone conducts heat. But I'm just going to check whether it's got to 70 degrees Celsius. That would be the minimum, I think, you want to have it. So if it's got to that stage, out it comes. I cover it with foil and a proper kitchen towel, you know, one of the fluffy ones that's fabric. And that will just keep it warm while I cook the potatoes. So the oven is turned up to, I would use gas mark 6, which is... So I turn the oven up to gas mark 6, which is about 200 degrees Celsius. Let it get hot for a few minutes, then whack in my tray of potatoes and parsnips. I've given them another turnover before I put them in the oven, and I've taken off the lid. So they're going to take about 45 minutes. That's time to do the rest of the veg, make some gravy, warm the plates up. And then eventually my potatoes and parsnips are done. I might have turned them over halfway through. Out they come. And if I want to brown the chicken skin, I will uncover that, turn the oven up to maximum, pop it in for 5 minutes until the chicken is done and until the skin is done. There you go. Roast chicken, roast potatoes, roast parsnips. Dead easy.
TNS Soundings.
Thank you to all our Sandwell volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us. James, Debbie, Lauren, Sarbjit, Jenny and Kate, along with Sarah Ann for doing the quiz. Thanks to Sue for picking all the articles that everyone's read, to Cyrita for uploading everything to the website and enabling us to have a podcast feed on Spotify. And thanks to Ray for editing everything and doing all the work that he does to put everything together. Thanks to Tony and Gavin for burning everything onto the CDs and putting them on the USB sticks and sending them out in the post to you. Finally, a big thank you to Alison for covering sending everything out to people whilst I've been away. Well, have a lovely week, everyone. I hear there's going to be a heat wave this weekend, so by the time you hear this, you might be out there in the sunshine.
Yes, indeed, Pam, and thanks for everything you've done this week. And we are having a heat wave, probably a mini one. In the middle of next week, temperature will be up to 29, 30 degrees. So watch out, take care, and we'll all be back with you next week with the next Talking News. Bye-bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.